Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904, Jacksonville.
They are not ready for prime time.
Prime time.
Prime time.
Prime time, that's the name.
Prime time.
Prime time.
What time is it? Showtime prime time.
It's XL Prime Time, featuring Joe C.
Dang it!
Matt Hayes.
I'm not running over the Barnett Tower and heaving myself off.
Mia O'Brien.
One of those bugs just flew in my mouth. Yeah,
and Leon Searcy.
Keep everything above the way.
Midweek is here. You're just about a week out from Thanksgiving, from carving up the turkey. People starting to think about that. And we've got some ball on the brain as well. Bye week for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Important games for a lot of college football teams that you follow. And, heck, there's a ton of NFL football that's on the slate, even though the Jags are off this week. So we'll look at all of them. Welcome in. Wednesday's brought to you by the Golf Club of Southampton. And good things going on at Southampton, including what's going on the golf course and then their patio music scene Friday night, which is always outstanding. So we'll be telling you all about the Golf Club of Southampton and our Toys for Tots tournament, which is coming up in a couple of Wednesdays, December 7th out there. But we got bunches to get into, including the rankings. And I know that they don't mean a whole hell of a lot, but right now, it's the only thing you can go off of, and we're taking a look at the top four, so we'll debate it and have a little fun with it. And then throw out another Jaguar topic today, people, because yesterday we said bye during the bye week to either Jaguars players, maybe some personnel people, maybe some trends and things that they were doing on the football field. Like, I love Leon's first suggestion was, stop it with this sweep action on third and short or fourth and inches and all of that. So we had a bunch of response with that. But today, you got the bye week, and you got another week going into that next game. That's a big one against B-more. So basically we're phrasing it as you got 2 weeks to fix it. What are you going to fix? What is the main thing that you're looking at as a Jaguar fan that you would like to see fixed first and foremost? So we'll throw that out there. You got a quick thought on that, Big? Because there's just so many things that we probably could attack, but
the first thing I would fix is the pass rush.
Yes. I knew absolutely. You were going to say it. I knew you were going to say it. I'm letting
absolutely,
you set it
up. Do something. I don't know what kind of drill you can design. I don't know what kind of point of emphasis that you've got to make in the meetings, on the film, on the field, but you've got to do a better job getting after the passer. I mean, I know Patrick Mahomes is dynamic. He's once in a generation, future Hall of Famer, but to have him in that game and literally have 5, 6, 7 seconds to move and maneuver and look down the field is just outrageous. I mean, DBs and safeties can't cover that long. They can't, especially if you're playing zone. They're going to find spots in your zone if you give them that amount of time. Especially Patrick Mahomes, you give him that amount of time, he's going to be precise. Precise with his throws. He's going to be like a doctor. He's going to be operating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little surgical.
Surgical. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. Surgical, which is what they can do. That's for sure. We've got Chris Jackson coming up a little bit later on, wide receiver coach, who will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. And look, we can probably go up and down on these receivers because they have had their share of drops. But last week, combined 17 catches from Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. That's pretty good.
And they're spreading the ball around, which I know even last year with all the struggles the wide receiver core had a season ago, that was a hallmark of Trevor Lawrence and how he distributes the ball. Mm-hmm. So I think you're seeing more of that. Obviously, we're seeing, at least against Kansas City, Trevor and this wide receiver core connecting a little bit further downfield. He's still not pushing it perhaps the way he would like to. Maybe when Calvin Ridley shows up in a couple of months, maybe he will be able to do that. So, yes, definitely excited to get his insight. But to Leon's point about the pass rush being what he wants in the next 2 weeks for the Jaguars to really build up upon, I've been thinking a lot, and I know we've debated it on 1010XL and 92.5 FM every program the last 48 hours, what to do with Devin Lloyd. Is he lost? Is his brain really muddled and he's hit this rookie wall and he doesn't know what he's doing? Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks, both on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures and here on the air, have said that perhaps it might be better not just to simplify things for the rookie, but to say, hey, we need help in the pass rush. Maybe you push him more to the outside. If only on third down, you make him a designated blitzer. And that's what I'm curious to see if that's what they do, because they do want to get Chad Muma on the field to see what they have.
Absolutely not.
No?
Don't simplify for the rookie. I mean, you're not you he's not the only person. Okay, you simplify for him, then you stress everybody else out who knows the game plan. He's not the one – he's not the most important guy on the defense. Yes, he's a rookie, and you want him to excel – but not at the expense of everybody else.
But I would also think coordinators could probably carve you up a little bit, Maddie, if they know that you have deficiencies on the defensive side of the football, and they're just going to feast on that. They're going to attack that. And basically trying to go from man to zone, they attacked it. They feasted on it.
All right, so I'm going to hit that real quick. I want to get to the one thing that everyone want changed.
Yeah.
That real quick, we're 10 games in. Mm-hmm. Don't panic on the kid yet. Mm-hmm. 10 games in. He'll be fine. He's got athletic ability. He can run. He's a big dude. They'll figure it out.
He's swimming right now. There's no
question. He is swimming. There's no doubt. They'll figure it out. Here's what I want changed. I want somebody on that team to get pissed off, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Someone, anyone, coach, player, anyone, owner, anyone get publicly pissed off and hold each other accountable. Publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Hold the guy accountable.
In other
someone
words,
to say, hey, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We should be 7-3 right now, and we're 3-7.
Yeah.
Someone say something.
In other words, what Cam Robinson said the other day, said we're tired of, you know, this and that, but he was the main one responsible for the reason they didn't get in the end zone, because he was down the field.
Let me edit it real quick. Someone of substance to say something.
Well, but Cam's supposed to be a leader. Off. That's the problem, okay? We're talking year 6 now.
You mean not doing
it? Why doesn't Shad come out and just get pissed off?
Oh, come on. That ain't going to happen.
Why not?
It just doesn't, as a rule, unless your name is Jerry Jones. It just
I got news for you. The other 12 years haven't worked.
Yeah, but well,
I'm not trying something different.
I totally agree with that. But it's so funny that we kind of – this is where you go over the top on a guy who just barely got here and inherited all this hot mess that Duval's been
I'm saying he should get pissed off, too, is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I'd like to
– Yeah.
Doug generally operates with a smile on his face.
I would love to see him walk up to that podium and say, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
We're 3-7, and we should be 7-3, and we're still making the same dumb mistakes we made week one.
Well, I am –
Hold them publicly accountable. Even if you do it in the locker room, Joe.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Even if you do it in the locker room
– I don't
care, because the locker room – and Leon can speak to this. The locker room is not the same as you going out publicly and saying – these guys are still making the same dumb mistakes they made.
I don't need it. I don't need it publicly to be said.
Yeah,
honestly.
But he would be going out of character if he did something.
All
like
the
that.
Better. Then that means he must be really pissed off.
I mean, because
Jim Irsay inside Matt Hayes' body right now.
He must be. But the truth of the matter is, they do play hard for him.
Yeah.
But they just make stupid and silly mistakes. I don't know if you pinpoint that, because you don't want to take away the fact that this team does play hard for you. They have shown signs of looking like a functioning NFL team.
Since when did it become a problem to call people out?
Yeah.
You can do it in the building.
It's 2022.
Yeah, you do it in the building.
That's why.
You do it in the building. I'm sure.
Did Jimmy call you guys out outside the building?
Rarely. No. He never did that.
Yeah.
Did Tom?
He cussed us out inside the building.
Did Tom call you out outside the building?
Tom wouldn't say players. He would address, he would say the offense couldn't protect
Right. I'm not saying call out specific players. I'm saying, say this crap has to stop right now.
We're
still making the same mistakes we made. Now,
if he does that. Yeah. But
I'm not saying call out players. No, I wouldn't do that either. I'm saying in general.
But it's so funny. If you kind of read between the lines that Doug Peterson has had really throughout the regular season, when games do count, he has basically said the plays were there. We've got to make the plays. And he says this is – you know, he does couch it with a few excuses. And look, I don't blame him. He walked into a mess.
A mess.
And okay, part of it, too, is lest we forget, we had Trayvon Walker back-to-back games with the roughing the passer penalty. Mm-hmm. Doug Peterson, if not directly, he did hint at that yes, that's got to change. Mm-hmm. Hasn't had one since. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, though, Matt, is like, yes, he can say too many dumb penalties.
Wait, what did you say? He said it and then hasn't had one since.
Yeah.
It's weird how that works.
Right. But here's the thing. What I'm about to say is that was the issue weeks five and six. And now we have Cam running for ineligible receiver downfield into the end zone. So it's something different every week. That's the problem. It just keeps changing.
How about if Doug walks up the podium and says, I can't remember the last time we got a sack when it meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And then see how quickly that changes.
Right. Well, I'm with Leon on this. You don't go out there and berate your players or embarrass your players.
You're not berating your embarrassing. You're calling them out.
Yeah, but you can do it in the building.
Well, here's the thing. You're hoping you have enough leadership inside that locker room to where you can hold the guys accountable if they're not getting the job done. And every locker room I've been in, if guys, the offense is not running the ball or producing, the defense will say, hey, offense, how long you want us to carry you? Mm-hmm. Or if the offense is doing well and the defense is struggling, the offense will say, hey, defense, can we get a stop? I mean, those type of things go back and forth.
But that doesn't have as much impact inside the locker room as it does outside. If someone on the team hears them publicly call a unit out or a situation out, then all of a sudden everybody knows what's going on. Everybody knows what it is. Like you were saying, I don't know what has to be done with the pass rush, but it's got to happen. Well, you can go down the line on that one. I don't know why they dropped the ball, but it's got to stop.
That's fair. And we're all grown men.
I don't know why they missed blocks, but it's got to stop.
That's fair, and we're all grown men. And the offensive line comes in, Doug Peterson's office and says, okay, coach, you called us out on protections. Quit running those stupid sweep plays on third and one.
Okay, fine, then you got problems.
Then we're good.
No, we're good. I'm grown.
If you're going to call us out, then we're going to come in your office and ask you to stop running dumb sweeps.
If you make $8 million a year to come off the edge and make a sack, guess what?
Hey,
make a play.
I'm good with it. I mean, it's all in fair. All fair is love and war.
Well,
fair is
love. He's got 2.5 sacks.
I agree with you.
He gets $9 million a year.
How about this?
I'm just saying, real quick. Coaches, you're saying
you're protecting the players is what you're doing. I think you are.
Of course I am. you're saying that Doug Peterson go in there and say what he wants to say. But I can tell you this, not too many coaches appreciate offensive line coming to his office, telling him, hey, listen, on third and short and third and two or something like that, quit running freaking sweeps and let us pound the ball.
But
I'm
maybe
telling you,
when
too many head coaches
that.
Don't like that.
No, I agree with you. But maybe
but
when
fair,
you
though.
Say that,
okay.
Maybe when you say that, he thinks, all right. These guys want to run the ball between the tackles. Yeah. Let's do it.
It just becomes a tit for tat.
How about that? Yeah,
well,
let's
how
do
about
it.
This?
It's exactly what it is. Let's do it. We'll run between the tackles. You stop holding.
What dimension are you on right now?
I'm not on any dimension. My point is,
he had a lot of candy.
I'm not on any dimension. It's just I just think we keep saying, well, it could be this.
Donna Murphy,
and maybe
brought
we
in,
can do this. Yes, and in fact, there's no could or maybes anymore.
Donna Murphy
that
brought
Reese's
in all
Cups
candy.
Yeah.
And now he's already gobbled up some peanut M&M.
He had his Reese's Pieces. He's going nuts.
I had a piece of candy. Come on.
Eight? I had three.
This is like when a freshman in college has like one or two beers.
Yes, this is the equivalent of that. But no,
I'm just so tired
so
of like,
figured out.
And I'm not hacking on Lee because Lee, he's right. But Leon said, I don't know what has to be done. I mean, I'm tired of saying I don't know what has to be done.
Well,
you're getting paid millions of dollars. You have two sacks. Go get the quarterback.
Yeah, but guess what? I mean, all those guys are getting paid a bunch, and the other guy across him is beating him. It doesn't even matter about money.
Leon, the question though I have, and for all of you, is back in 2018, 2019. There was a guy on this roster by the name of Yannick Ngakoue, and it seemingly felt like every other week, whenever this team was in a tailspin, there was a fight in the locker room. There was a fight in training camp. There was a scuffle in the locker room. Is that a solution? Because I felt like during those losing streaks in 2018 and 2019 that almost made it worse.
Well, I mean, having a fight, it lets you know they got a heartbeat, that they care a little bit.
You think this team got a heartbeat?
I don't know. I mean, if you're 3-7, there's nothing to be happy about.
No.
You know, and listen, any job you go on, you know, you may not like the guy. You work with him, but you may not like him. So scuffling and fighting when you're losing is okay. I wouldn't mind it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't always have to be reported. I hate that it had to be reported because sometimes you want to handle things internally, and sometimes you just got to get a good fight off. You know, because you're frustrated because of the way the season. Yeah.
And look, the way I
but
qualify,
it's just push stuff. They're not
yeah, it's
fight,
not. It's
right?
just push stuff.
But it's like, and I keep maintaining this is that is, it's still a 7-loss, 3-win team. There's no way to get away from that. Record is your record.
2-8 last year this time, by the way.
Yeah, and so they're not that much different. And heck, Matthew Wright helped them to that second win. The first one with his 50-plus yard field goals in London.
That's another one. You missed two field goals, you're still on the team.
Yeah, and I look at it like they look and appear to me a more complete football team, a passionate football team that plays better, a developing quarterback that easily could blossom into a star.
Judge it on Dubs.
No, I'm just telling you. I choose to look at things in a positive way. That's just how I'm wired.
I'm going by your saying.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that I know that they are still a three-win team. Suck, suck, suck. There's no getting away from that. But I am seeing the earmarkings of better play, better management, better playbook, better performance. There's definitely a lot of things that I'm leaning on to help it be the recipe to turn the corner.
Here's what I don't see from this team. And I've been on the teams like this in Jacksonville and with the Steelers. When it comes to the fourth quarter, I don't see no let's go get it. I don't see any let's go get it. Yeah. I've been on let's go get it teams. Whether we're up by 14 or we're down by 14, we know how important the fourth quarter is. You can't have mistakes, can't have turnovers, you can't have penalties. Let's be mistakes free and let's go get it. I don't feel that with this team at majority.
They've done
of
it once.
One
they
time
did against the Raiders.
It is the Raiders. Yeah. Where is that fire? That
that's where they've lost six fourth quarter leads or five.
And
quarter
if you understand that during this season, you've lost. What, 6 one-score games, and most of those one-score games are in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
That's what I'm missing. I'm missing that with let's-go-get-it mentality from this team. They did it one time. And whatever they did to harness that, they just need to bottle that up and drink it before the fourth quarter.
How do you create it, Leon? Can it be created? Or does it have to be? It's got to be the dudes in the locker room. It's got to be a culture.
It's got to be already be there within the locker room. It's not like a switch. You've got to already have had it, you know, that mentality, that circle
of
wagons.
Yeah,
circle the wagons type of thing. Because I've been on teams where the defense say, okay, fourth quarter, hey, we're going to get a stop. We get a stop, y'all score. And then we'll say, okay, you get that stop, then we're going to score a touchdown. That type of fake stuff, that real stuff, that's looking in your teammate eyes and say, hey, bro, you get a stop, we're going to score. Mm-hmm. That type of look.
But don't they get embarrassed at some point, too? At some point, when you keep losing games like this, don't you get embarrassed?
Of course you do. Of course you do.
I don't understand how do those need to change then.
Listen, if I was on this 3-17, I would never leave the house. I would not let anybody know. I would never leave the house.
Here's what
absolutely
you've got.
Not.
Yeah, and look, if you want to call it excuse making, I don't care. I'm just trying to look at it the other way and simply say, who do you lean on that has veteran experience when it comes to winning? Okay, look at the free agents that came in. Shaq Griffin has either been a hurt or a disappointment. There's no getting away from that. Foley Fadakasi comes in, makes plays, but then gets hurt. Where did he come? He came from a loser in the New York Football Jets. Aluakon, leading tackler in the National Football League. Where did he come from? A loser in the Atlanta Falcons. You can go down the line with guys that have been brought in that are experienced but don't have winning experience necessarily. All right, so then let's go to the other guys. Cam Robinson, the entire time he's been here, he's had one winning season, and he was a big part of it. He was a rook, and he started right away.
Play for a team in college that knows how to win.
Well, sure. But
So did Trayvon Walker.
Yeah, and I don't know.
So did Josh Allen at the program.
I'm so over, hey, he came from a winner in college. I could care less, although Josh Allen did come from a winner. That's
he came from the program.
But he came from the program because his first year at Kentucky, weren't they like 4-8 or something like that?
Yeah, that was a time when they
had – when Stoops first took over because he was, I believe, Stoops' second
themselves.
Recruiting class. Yeah.
They had better players in blue than Florida had in blue.
Well, they have three of the last 5 years. I know that.
Yeah, that year, that's for sure. But I'm just looking – you have to lean on leadership that knows how to get it done on an NFL football field. And Doug has certainly seen it. He's coached it, and it's you know, proven with trophies. And I do think that when you start to see the sum total of a few more pieces added, and I'm not looking ahead or anything like that, but that ultimately is going to be the deciding factor. That is what is going to make this football team better. You know, it's so funny that you look around and you see guys that you know are capable and good, but then you also look and see other guys that aren't. You want to know the one thing that I want to fix in 2 weeks' time? And Coach Campbell and I went into it yesterday on the Campo and Joe podcast. You can look for it on all of our social media platforms. Is learning how to coach from man to zone. Okay, here we are. You're number two, and this team still struggles with learning how to go from man to zone, learning how to make those reads, make those decisions with a bunch of guys that haven't worked together. And I don't know whether that's a huge, huge deal, but when you've dropped in Fadakasi, you've dropped in Aluakon, you've drafted Trayvon, and on and on with all these guys, and they all haven't been together for a long time. They got absolutely schooled on those big plays because they couldn't move from man to zone efficiently.
Well, there was another thing Coach Campo was talking about when you make that turn from man to zone is because it's all concepts of who you run with, who you pass off, time. Mm-hmm. He was like, because of the collective bargaining agreement, that you got so much, you got limited time with guys in the film room, mm-hmm. on the field, that kind of stuff. You got to have full speed, half speed, walk through. If you're going to make that kind of adjustment, you're going to go from man to zone. I mean, you don't have that time because you got team period, you got this individual, this and that. You're trying to run plays, but you got to conceptualize what you're doing in zone, and that takes time, bro. Especially when you've been using man principles all half the year, and now you're going to use zone principles, and you got to give it to Andy Reid as well. He knew.
Oh yeah.
He drew what he Coach Campbell said that he designed his plays to attack our weakness.
Mm-hmm.
He was masterful in doing it. Yeah. He absolutely.
It's a smart stash, is what that is. Big belly,
it's
smart
not,
stash.
It's not like these guys haven't gone from man to zone in the middle of the season before, mm-hmm. in college.
Oh.
Or even in pro.
Well, I actually don't know it in college. I really don't. Because,
sure, they do.
And by the way, they were superior.
They go mid game.
Yeah, but they were superior athletes in those games. That's the one thing that I can't get over, the fact that we look at college and we want to try and make it comparable to the NFL.
No, it's not comparable.
You overpower
it's the
out talent.
No, it's the knowledge of what to do, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you have that knowledge. If it's not working out at the NFL level, it's because what Leon said, you're not used to the guys around you. You don't know each other. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
On the offensive line, the secondary, everywhere. Everywhere.
I mean, because if you do the transition for in colleges, I mean, you know all these guys.
Right.
You've been playing with them 2 or 3 years, so you're having conversations on that kind of stuff. And you're absolutely right. When you got a free agent over here, another guy from here.
A rookie here.
I mean, that's my...
It's about relationship. Yeah. It's all about really relationships and communication.
All right. I mean, that was my whole point going into this, is that I don't understand why they don't have a good grasp on it. This also is coaching along with players. But think about this. Darius Williams, brand new to this football team.
Yeah.
Okay, you add Darius as a starter. Cisco stepping up as a starter.
Aluakon,
a Trayvon. I mean, you can go down the line. We're talking six new faces.
And you're asking two edge rushers who've never covered before to cover now.
Yeah.
Well, who's the Mike? The Mike is in Aluakon?
Yeah, got to be Aluakon.
I mean, it's Aluakon, but the problem is he's an off-ball linebacker.
Right.
He's making the calls.
He's making the call.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Whoever's making the call is setting the table for everybody to eat.
I said that's part of the issue that they had this past weekend against the Chiefs, is that you had Aluakon making the calls, but he also was man-marking Travis Kelce. And so in terms of creating some sort of stability in the middle of the defense, you didn't have anybody because he was trying to follow Kelce around. And so that's, I think, part of why Chad Muma had to come in, because at least Chad Muma, correct me if I'm wrong, is like a true Mike linebacker.
He is a true Mike.
And they don't have anybody else who can really play that position.
I mean, he is. And now that we've figured out your problem, okay, let's go back to my problem, because everybody on the text line thinks I'm an idiot. Somebody didn't piss in my cereal. Mm-hmm. I don't know why fans out there are settling for this either. I don't know why everybody's just settling for 3-7 and saying, all right, well, they're growing. You're not a team that's in the fourth quarter every single game, and you're down by possession, and you shouldn't just give those games away.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't be happy with just giving those games away because you're in the fourth quarter. My whole point is it's got to be emotional and mental for this team. They've got to be embarrassed by the way they're playing. They've got to be motivated by the way they're playing and to play differently the next time,
mm-hmm.
because they have guys on there that can make plays. We've seen it.
It's true. It's
on
true.
Both sides of the ball, they have guys that can make plays.
Right.
So they've got something has to motivate them.
Right.
That's my whole point. What is motivating them right now? It's not the money they're making.
Yeah.
All right? It's not playing in the NFL, clearly, because they're 3-7. You keep making the same mistakes.
Well, I don't even know if I would say they keep making the same mistakes. It just gets divvied up with different guys doing bad things at the worst possible time and just absolutely being out-talented. Okay? Kansas City... They out-talented.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But you can say they out-talented, but the reality is they kick those field goals and Cam doesn't go in the end zone. You're right there.
Yeah, I think we all would agree.
I'm not saying they're as talented as a Chiefs. I'm not. All I'm saying is you're there. So my question to you then, Leon, because you've played this game, what motivates you? What motivates you?
Well, here's the thing. When I was playing, why we took so much pride in being Jaguars, because this was my job. This was my team. So it mattered to me how I looked on this team. It did, and everybody else in that locker room. Even though we were a fairly young upstart team, it wasn't our job. This was our team. That's why Jimmy, Keenan, we wanted to rep Jacksonville to the fullest. And that's the reason why – and we competed that way. And that's the reason why we had the success that we had, because we cared about what we looked like in Jacksonville.
That's a big deal. Honestly, that is a big, big deal right there. And that's kind of hitting it on the head. And so we'll see what they do, with this off week. So hit us on the text line, Design by Lifetime Enclosures. You got 2 weeks to fix it. What are you going to fix? Let us know, 641-1010. We'll keep it going on that topic. We got Mickey Ryan from 104.5 The Zone coming up in the next seg, because we got to talk about a bowl-eligible pursuit on the part of the
Florida Gators. Hang on 1 second, okay?
Against the Commodores.
So speaking of Mickey Ryan, real quick, because this fits into everything we're talking about right now, okay? They go to Kansas City.
The Titans.
Okay?
Not Vanderbilt.
The Titans, Titans go to the Chiefs, almost win with a backup quarterback, okay? A backup quarterback. If they win that game, they're the one seed right now in the AFC. That team is. Think about that.
They started 0-2.
They were 0-2 when we're on a five-game win streak. I mean, they definitely had it rolling. But again, that is a team that is proven.
That's a team that's got a little something inside him, is what it is.
Well, yeah. And look, we talked about this earlier in the week. You can give Mike Vrabel – I give Mike Vrabel a ton of credit, even though I did catch him with a photo, which I will retweet, Week of Tennessee, picking his nose. I will retweet that. But he is a unbelievable coach that can scheme it up well and inspire players. And hell yeah, I want to see some of that from this squad. But it just doesn't
happen.
It's a little
intestinal fortitude is what they
have.
Yeah, they're the bullies.
Yes.
And until we play like bullies, we're always going to get beat.
Yeah, and like we said
yesterday.
They
got a little oomph.
We looked at that.
That's how Pittsburgh was.
Yeah, what was it, 33-25 or 33-24, something like that. They have the upper hand. And it's not even that close because they've had the upper hand of late. For a long, long time.
Didn't Malik Willis, I'm going to look it up. I mean, he dropped back, what was it, 11 times? 16. Five of 16.
Right. Yeah, hardly at all. Yeah.
5 of 16. They almost went into KC and won that game.
Yeah, because they had a guy named Derrick Henry. Ever heard of him?
They also had a little stones in them, if you know what I mean. Yeah,
their defense played awesome, too, in that game.
And look, we are not going to argue about what – that was a number one seed last year that's been in the postseason a dozen times. Okay, and this football team hasn't been in a dozen years, but once. Okay, yeah, if you want to argue this versus that, yeah, that's going to win most of the time because they've been good for a while. That was a number one team that got embarrassed divisional week because they thought they had it. They were going to be crowned in Cincinnati when they're in just black-eyed them and said, good night now. You had one postseason Sunday and you're
every
done.
Every year is new in the NFL, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and we're going to find out what this team can do with the remaining weeks that they have in front of them. Golf Club of Southampton, we would love to hear from you on a Wednesday. You can head on out there and see a beautiful golf course. The cooler temps, always a great way to change it up a little bit. Instead of that sun beating down on you, you can enjoy the cool temps at the Golf Club of Southampton. Call 287-PLAY. Let's say hello to Mickey Ryan coming up from Nashville, 104.5 The Zone.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
I applaud J.J. LaSelva playing some Holiday in the Sun because he knows his holiday he's headed for this weekend will be sunny. A little chilly up there in Beantown.
Island in the Sun.
Island in the Sun.
And it will not be on an island. Yes, I got a photo from my brother sent to me yesterday. It's snowing. And I was like, Rick, dude, it's snowing up there. He's like, yeah, that'll happen. It's November. Yeah.
Island in the Sun, but it's from, can you name the movie, Holiday in the Sun, starring. I'm really throwing you guys for a loop.
Yeah, I'm going to guess Cocktail.
Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be something like that.
The girls.
We watched a lot of that at slumber parties circa 2001. So it is XL primetime, 12:36 on the dial. Me, O'Brien, Joe C., Matt Hayes.
Listen,
Leon,
I watched
Cersei.
The Cheetah Girls, as Matt's laughing. I watched the Cheetah Girls with my daughter for years. Okay,
I've watched much of that stuff. Yeah,
I watched a lot of Mean Girls and all that.
Confess. Yeah. I could quote a few of them.
Full House in the
Leon,
news
you got
right
anything
now, not for
on
the right
Olsen
reasons.
Twins?
Yeah.
Nothing. Got nothing for you.
Full House is in the news right now, not for the right reasons. But we
Why?
Won't
what
go there. Apparently, Candace Cameron Bure, who played DJ, she's starting like a spin-off Hallmark channel, but it's going to be like a Christian, religious-focused like
What's
channel.
What's wrong with that?
Apparently, that upset some of her
former... Twitter. That upset Twitter, of course.
She probably God. Be
it
okay
pissed
with
off
it.
Some Nickelodeon stars, apparently. Some Disney Channel
She'll
stars.
Be all right.
I don't know, man. Gen Z wasn't having it. But, you know, it happens.
Godless. Yeah.
And, you know, just to swing it back to sports, you know, talk about trying to please them all. I love what Bob on on the South Side said, listening to University of Florida fans this week, you would think they're playing the Crimson Tide in an away game. That's right. That's right. They are building up.
It should be noted. It should be noted. Clark Lee did say at SEC Media Days that Vanderbilt would become the best team in the nation.
Yep. They're building something.
So
up there.
They're approaching Crimson Tide
Anchor
territory.
Down.
Slowly.
Anchor down.
Surely.
Yeah.
You're worried now, aren't you? Yes, you are. You're
Why
legitimately
would I be?
Worried.
You think
right
he's
now.
Projecting?
Yeah.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think you know it's going to be in the 20s, and they're going to lose that game. I think you know.
No, see, here's how I look at it. I look at it realistically.
Speaking
okay?
of Island in the Sun, Nashville.
It took me 7 years to get through college. When I got to Florida, I went in with a 2.8 and I left with a 2.8. And I've got realistic expectations about everything. But I'm pretty fired up with the way things have turned the last couple of weeks. So that's really kind of what I'm looking at. And then I just look at Vanderbilt and I'm like, it's always a noon kickoff so you can win and celebrate on Broadway. That's just the way it's supposed to be. Vanderbilt defensively has always given Florida fits. Always. If you go back and look at the series, it's just one of those almost a napper game that you fall asleep on and forget about in November, and you got to rise up and beat them. And so this is Billy's opportunity. It really is. That's how I'm looking at it. It's his opportunity.
They're terrible on defense.
Yeah.
They can score points.
Yeah.
Okay. They looked good on defense last week because Kentucky, I've been telling you guys this all year, the program can't block.
Yeah.
Cannot block.
All I know is that they are beating a lesser or playing a lesser team. They should beat them.
Should.
Or Billy is going to, you know, feel the wrath of Gator fan for not getting it done.
Imagine Gator Twitter if they lose that game Saturday.
Oh, my gosh. And it would and go for it if that's what's going to happen. Because if they don't put up a good enough effort, hell yeah, get all over Billy.
We all want him fired?
No. Listen, don't put me in Gator Twitter the pile.
There will be some in Gator Twitter who want him fired.
They'll be second guessing. How about that?
Okay.
That's what they'll be doing.
Florida putting its 8-game win streak against the Commodores to the test this weekend. And for more on this matchup, we welcome Mickey Ryan on the Farrah and Farrah phone line.
Now. Another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Mickey Ryan joins us from Nashville. 104.5 The Zone is where you can find him, at Mickey Ryan 1045 on the Twitter machine. Mickey, I have to ask, are folks up in Nashville as fixated on this Vanderbilt Florida matchup as some folks here in Northeast Florida?
I would have to tell you this. Many people in Nashville are more fixated on the Vols being number 5 in the college football.
The truth right there.
No offense to anybody on either side at this 11 a.m. Central tilt on Saturday, but that has a much greater amount of people's attention right now is, you know, oh my gosh, can LSU lose again? And it sure would be great to see USC lose again, things like that.
Mickey, you know Gator Joe, okay? He's a little worried about Vandy right now. He's a little bit worried about Vandy right now. And I told him, Vandy, not so much defensively, but offensively. Offensively, they're doing some unique things. Could they stress the Gators?
They're doing
on
unique
Saturday?
Things like actually scoring.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Yeah.
Could they stretch the Gators? If the Gators decide they don't want to stop the run, you know, that would be one way that you could, you know, make this a game. I heard an interview with Clark Lee. He's done his regular media rounds this week, and you know, he essentially said, boy, this sure be a great game if we could just, you know, get out 14-0 or something. I thought, well, they're saying the same thing in, you know, Gainesville right now. It would seem like whoever got out to any type of lead in this game, I don't think Vandy is built to come back from any type of deficit. So if you're Florida, just keep Vandy one-dimensional and come out and try to jump out early. There'll probably be myriad of Florida fans. You know, I don't think there's going to be any type of home field advantage for Vanderbilt. I've been to Florida Vanderbilt games before, and the Florida fans certainly travel, and they like a weekend in Nashville as well as anybody. So I don't know if Vandy can do enough offensively if this thing got to any type of shootout level to stay in the game.
Gators can honky-tonk with the best of them. We're talking with Mickey Ryan. I would classify him as my bourbon brother. And Maddie Hayes was trying to paint me into a corner there, Mickey. And look, I said before you jumped on, you know, Billy Napier had better set a standard with this football team that says we don't fear anybody, especially the likes of that team in Nashville. That's the way he's got to approach this game.
It's interesting, Joe, because here's Billy Napier, and I know a lot of his credentials winning on the field came in the Sun Belt at Louisiana. But if you look at the guy's resume and where he's been and what he's done, maybe he wasn't the guy that all the Florida fans wanted. Maybe a lot of them didn't want him, but he had a great resume. He's under a lot of pressure. Clark Lee, on the other hand, guys, he's under no pressure, none. Only what he puts on himself, you know, at the end of the day. So he is in a, you know, here are two young coaches trying to find their way. And if Clark Lee loses to Florida, well, they've got their SEC win for this year. They hadn't had one since 2019. Billy Napier is in Florida. They're under all the pressure here. There's none for Vandy.
So, Mickey, y'all playing with house money, huh?
Well, that's it sure looks that way, Leon.
So, Mickey, y'all had a big win against Kentucky. If you pull off the shocker this Saturday against Florida, that'll be another big win for you. I mean, were your expectations this high on the team going into the season? And also, what would a bowl, going to a bowl, mean to Vanderbilt?
Oh, gosh. I mean, they've got four wins and two games left. You know, it would be a tall order to beat Florida. It would be a tall order to beat this Tennessee team. You know, these guys, like I said, the expectations here, I think Vegas had their win over under total briefly at like two games or one and a half at one point.
Wow.
And we all said, look, that's stealing money. We all thought, okay, three non-conference wins, and can they compete in the SEC? Can they win an SEC game? Well, they did all that. They've exceeded expectations already.
Mickey Ryan of 104.5 The Zone joining us on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. You can catch Blaine and Mickey 1 to 3 Central Time on 104.5 The Zone each and every weekday. Mickey, since you mentioned Tennessee as being the real talk of the town up there in Nash Vegas, let's briefly touch on them before we ask you about those rival Titans. Hendon Hooker and company, obviously, you know, they got pushed around by the Georgia Bulldogs, I think, quite simply. So what is the vibe in Vols camp right now? Is it truly just scoreboard watching and seeing what LSU and USC are doing? Or do the Vols believe they can control their own destiny and get to the playoff?
How do I say this, guys? I think they nervously think they can control their own destiny. How about that? Mm-hmm. Just like where you nervously think, well, I mean, if we take care of business, we're fine, right? I mean, we're okay. I mean, right, if we just score, I don't know, 66 against, you know.
Vanderbilt?
Yes. So, you know, we all kind of laughed on Friday of last week. I used the word style point. Well, they went out and they style pointed on Saturday. That's the most points they've ever scored in the Heupel era. They set a program record for total offense in a game. So I think they're just going to try to pile up as much points as they can. And then, again, hope things become so glaringly easy for the committee that they just have to put the balls in there.
All right, Mickey, we've been talking all morning about, you know, I'm sure this is going to shock you, by the way. How do you fix the Jags? Like, what would be the one thing you would change in this bye week? And I said, I want somebody to get pissed off publicly. Just get after it. Get angry. And then I kind of mentioned the Titans, who started 0-2. They go into Kansas City, the same place the Jags just went into and looked lost, go into Kansas City with a backup quarterback and nearly win the game. And the kid hit 5 of 19 passes. But it's that intestinal fortitude that they have. They go into games, and they're tough, and they know what it's like to be tough and win games. So this Titans team, you're looking at this Titan teams now, halfway through. Are they a legit Super Bowl contender?
Matt, I'll tell you this. We have this discussion all the time, and we don't know. We don't know. The defense is, they're becoming who we thought they would be. They weren't for a couple of games. You mentioned the first couple of games didn't go well. They had a players-only meeting. Like, supposedly Jeff Simmons went to Vrabel and said, hey, man, don't come in the room for a few minutes. We're about to handle something. and Big Jeff said that to anybody. Like, I'd be like, okay, have at it, big fella. Do right. What? Tell me how long you would like for me to be gone. And so they supposedly go in the room and things were said and, you know, some things were hashed out. They've been a completely different team since then. I mean, they give up a lot of passing yards. They relentlessly hit quarterbacks. They stop the run relentlessly. You know, you mentioned, like, what could the Jags do? Well, here's what the Titans have decided they're going to do. They're going to make every game as ugly as possible. They're going to make you do what they want to do. You know, it'd be like if you guys went out, Joe had a couple too many pops, and, you know, he wanted to fight somebody. Well,
that happens often.
Well, I mean, if Joe has it, like, if Joe's like, hey, man, it doesn't matter. Biggest guy, smallest guy, fastest, slowest, I'm going to go straight for the knees. I'm going to take him down. I'm going to ground and pound. Well, that's the Titans. They go into the bar every week. They pick a fight with somebody. Doesn't matter what they look like or what they can do or can't do. And then they just take them down and ground and pound them and see what happens. You know? I mean, they almost beat the Chiefs. They completed six passes in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Crazy. Mm-hmm.
You know, Mickey, it's interesting that Doug Peterson said before the Kansas City game that Kansas City was the measuring stick on what this team should be. And I totally disagreed with him because the bully on the block is the Titans. They're the bully on the block. And if you're going to make any kind of playoff run as a Jacksonville Jaguar, you got to come through the Titans. And it was the same way when I was in Jacksonville. You had to beat the Steelers. The Steelers were the bullies. And I'm telling the guys here, until the Jaguars learn how to be rough and tough and physical and close out games in the fourth quarters, they don't have a chance against the Titans because that's how they're built. They're built that way.
You know, Leon, how crazy is it, though, that when you talk about this team and historically you go, well, that's a team that had Earl Campbell. And you go, man, he was great on the ground. Gosh, what a great ground and pound team. And then when the Oilers move here, you know, when you think about your time playing and Blaine Bishop, who's my friend and my co-host, you know, everything they did was behind Eddie George. And then they did everything with CJ 2K, who's a different back totally, but still it was a run-based attack, you know, another 2,000-yard rusher. And now with Derrick Henry, who's like a sophisticated cyborg who was sent back in time, he doesn't even look real when you stand next to him. But no matter what things changed in the NFL, the Titans want to run the ball 25 to 35 times and then just see what happens. And this is 2022 on Earth when it's no big deal for a team to throw 40 passes. The Titans wouldn't throw 40 passes, and they wouldn't throw 40 passes for any reason.
I was just going to say maybe 40 passes in a month. I'm thinking about it. And you know what you just made me think of, because I miss Broadway every time I say hello to Mickey, is that I'm thinking it's Robert's Western World versus Old Red and Jason Aldean's. It's old school versus, you know, today's world in a bar sense. It's true. All right, now let's get back to Tennessee real quick before we turn Mickey loose. He's got a show coming up with he and Blaine Bishop on 104.5 The Zone. But not necessarily what the fans are saying, Mickey, on your show, because I know they think Tennessee can get back in it and go toe-to-toe with anyone not named Georgia. But who do you think they are better than? Could they beat Ohio State? Could they beat Michigan? Who do you think they couldn't beat that's right now on the outside looking in?
I think if Ohio State wins, then I think there's no way Tennessee could pass them up. Now, can they beat them on the field? I don't know. I mean, they beat the crap out of LSU at LSU, and they outscored Bama. Now, Georgia's a different animal. So there's one team that I know Tennessee can't beat because they didn't beat them, and the scoreboard doesn't nearly indicate how close it was. I don't think right now they can beat Georgia. Now, maybe in a rematch anything could happen. But I think they could go toe-to-toe with anybody else. I do. I think they can score – and I think they can beat somebody 52-50 if that's what it takes.
Mm-hmm. And real quick, Mickey, before we let you go, one more on the Titans, because I know some of our listeners out there were a little surprised by the signing of Josh Lambeau to the Titans practice squad. What exactly is the kicking situation in Tennessee? And could we see Lambeau against the Jags in December and January?
So you're asking, could you see Lambeau at Lambeau? Is that what you're asking?
Also that, Lambeau at Lambeau, but also Lambeau back at TIA Bank Field, because I saw plenty of our Nooners, our listeners, they all are saying, oh, well, now it's going to happen. It's just going to happen.
Well, Blaine is the uniform police in Nashville. So, like, he makes sure everybody's got the right colored socks on and their towel's not too big. That's one of Blaine's jobs. So Blaine came up and his eyes were like the size of pie pans. And I said, what in the world is wrong with you? And he goes, the kicker's hurt. And I said, what? He goes, something wrong with Bullock, man. They got the punter out there kicking off. So I look on the field. Sure enough, there's Ryan Stonehouse, and he's out there kicking off. And normally he doesn't do that. So apparently Bullock tweaked something about 10 minutes before kickoff or so. So Mike Vrabel got asked about it this week by one of the, you know, just a grizzled veteran reporters here. Mike, what's it like to – go into the game and you don't know if kicker's hurt? And he goes, well, I think you're – and then he used a rhyme that – or word that means poop, but rhymes with fit. that it would scare that out of you. So Randy Bullock hasn't practiced this week. Kickers and, you know, leg problems. Who knows how long this run could go for Lambeau, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw Lambeau at Lambeau. And depending on how long Bullock is dealing with this, you know, who knows? You could see the return of Lambeau.
Yep. I was thinking a year of a non-compete for Lambeau to get a settlement is what I was thinking.
And we could bring Herb back, too, for that game.
Yeah. You never know. You never know. Mickey, always good catching up, bro.
I'll end you with a big stat. I was talking to a broadcast class. I told them always try to end with a bang. How about this? Vandy has a – because you called me and like, hey, can we – Matt sent me a message to say, will you talk about Vandy? I said, sure.
If forced.
Vanderbilt has a better overall record right now than Texas A&M.
That is
Vandy
beautiful.
Is 4-6 and A&M is 3-7. How about that?
Incredible. The Jimbo haters out there love you, Mickey. Yeah. We all love you, though. Thank you for hopping on with us. You're the man.
You guys are the best. Call me anytime.
All right. Talk to you later. That's good stuff. The Jimbo-led best recruiting class ever is worse than the Commodes, the Commodores, anchor down.
I mean, I told you guys at some point they're going to have to say what has more value right now, the players or the coach.
Yeah.
And if you decide it's the players and those great last four recruiting classes, suck it up, man.
It may
it's
happen.
86 mil.
Gosh.
Cost of doing business, right? Isn't that what we said?
Yeah. It's
all off season?
It's hard to fathom.
With Scott Frost, cost of doing business.
Yeah, but that was 12 mil. This is.
That it has gone that.
Six times that. Seven
that,
times
that far south. It really is something
real,
else.
Real quick, before we hit the break, I mean, do you feel like, because I've been thinking about it all week. I know 86 mil is a lot of moolah. I get that. It's a lot of cheddar. Does it look like the players are responding to him? And
I mean, they're 3-7. I don't think it does. He's had to suspend guys three different times this year. So clearly it doesn't look like they're responding to him. I think he's got a good – I think Connor Wingman could be a really good player in the league. But – I mean, is he going to develop or is he going to stagnate at some point with Jimbo? That's a huge question as well. Not only that and I said this in what I wrote earlier this week at Saturday Down South, is at some point, if he's not reaching those guys and they start to turn him off, they're just going to go, forget it, let's get out of here. We can go play next year at Florida. We can go play next year at Alabama. Just hop in the portal and go.
Yeah, portal.
What must be done eventually should be done immediately.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And my guess would be if they ended up doing that, there would probably be some kind of mitigation of Jimbo knows if he takes the full 86 mil, no one's going to hire him.
Mm-hmm.
But if he takes like a mitigated 45 mil over 10 years or whatever, then somebody will probably hire him.
No, they'll pay
him. Because the ADs and the presidents know that, you know, they work with each other. They talk to each other. They're not going to hire a guy that just got 90 million to walk away.
With absolutely no, I wouldn't think, a whole hell of a lot of motivation to go out and hit the recruiting trail.
So if he is serious about getting out of there because it's just not working, he's going to have to take, you know, a lower amount or stay there until they just pay him everything.
Yeah.
I think it'll be, personally speaking, I mean, I think he buys himself some time and he says, hey, injuries, I had to rotate through how many quarterbacks, so he'll get himself to next year. But if by next year, at which point, Matt, you'll have, what, five recruiting classes that you'll have cycled through? The entire roster is your guys.
No, the entire roster is his guys. Right
already.
Now.
Yeah, and he'll have to name a play caller.
He's going to have to get an OC and a quarterback's coach. But again, I'm not sure that's going to be it either. Because I'm not sure about UMass this weekend. Honestly, they should win the game. Who knows? Who knows? If that team really has turned him off, it's going to be interesting.
Fire.
I'll tell you that.
UMass and UConn.
And then you got LSU who needs the game at the end of the year. They're going there on fire.
Yeah.
For UMass, sure. So, UConn, world beaters.
Yeah.
So you're telling me I live in a world where UMass beats Texas A&M?
No. Could you imagine that? I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but could you imagine that? I mean,
scary.
Middle 10 went into Miami, beat Miami.
Yeah, but Middle Tennessee is a 1A like, program. Isn't UMass like 1AA?
They're still FBS.
They're just not in a conference.
They're an independent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plus, Middle 10 is like, what, 3-8 right now?
They're a juggernaut.
4-7?
Bro, they play hard.
It's all in that defense. XL Primetime continues. On the other side, we have Chris Jackson, wide receivers coach for your Jacksonville Jaguars, coming up at 1:20. Of course, Dr. Bari stopping by and a whole lot more. You are listening to 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
We saved you a seat. It's Lunch with Leon on 1010XL.
Brought to you by Wingstop.
1 o'clock hour is here. It's XL Prime Time. Hanging out on a Wednesday. 5. This time next week, you're looking at your stuffing recipe, your mashed potatoes, turkey.
Hey, we're going to have a cook-off here at 10:10. You're bringing the big one, the big bird.
Yeah. Here's what I found out. I thought I was taking the MacGyver of 1010XL on, Richie, in a turkey cook-off. And he said that he's putting a turkey in, but he's not competing. I'm like, wait a minute. You got to be part of the comp. I need somebody to stomp. And I don't know. He may be backing off right now.
He was so excited, too, because he's like, I'm going to put mine in the fryer. Mm-hmm. It's an excuse for me. My fryer broke a few years ago. Now I can finally go get a new one. Yeah. And then he says to me yesterday, he goes, yeah, I'll get a turkey, but I may not be the one who cooks it. And I was like, but Joe has like this award-winning recipe. Don't you want to win?
We're going. And by the way, I was thinking about doing the old spatchcock treatment to the turkey. And that
say
is
that
a treatment.
Again. Spatchcock.
That is
what does
a
that
treatment.
Mean?
Trust
what is
me.
That?
You cut it down the middle and spread it out.
Oh, okay.
Still connected, but spread out.
Yeah.
All right.
And you cook it like that.
But I still think it's
you're
going
talking
in
dirty to me, and I kind of like
thank
it.
Thank you, Hack.
Mm-hmm.
It's going in the grease. I still think it's going in the grease. Now, speaking of going in the grease, a little bit of I don't know, what would you call this? Maybe just a social media grease fire.
We
right
should
now.
Do that.
Yeah.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So I want to preface this by saying we were planning on this segment being about Rayshon Jenkins getting burnt a little bit by the Jaguars social media team and not being too happy about it yesterday. But it appears he is not the only Jacksonville Jaguar that is taking to social media during the bye week, which, by the way, they're practicing right now. So I'm excited to see when and if Leon gets a reply to this. Cam Robinson tweeting 1 hour ago in response to a fan's tweet from 3 days ago, in which the fan said, Jags fans are at Cam Robinson's head for they're at Jags fans are at Cam Robinson head for the downfield call that wasn't his fault. RPO plays are supposed to be a bang-bang thought process, not a 6-7 rollout play. To which Cam quote tweeted it and said, plot twist, a fan that actually knows what they're talking about. On a run-pass option RPO, you block for the run. Who knew? Our guy Leon Searcy just responded. We also know that you're supposed to run block and not run a route. I'm just saying.
True.
First off, bro, I'm not sure that was a run-pass option, okay?
Yeah. I don't think what is.
I'm not sure that was a true RPO.
It looked like it was a boot.
Yeah. It definitely did not look like it had an option in it, especially when Leon immediately said, everyone else is blocking to the right, quarterback's rolling left, he releases. You, right?
That's,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he knows not to go downfield. Absolutely. He, instead of just man up and saying, hey, listen, I made a mistake.
Yeah. And this
it
is
was a costly mistake, but I messed up.
Right. This is the costly, you know, one does not look like the other. And that's basically you had four guys blocking down to the right and the other guy, you know, taking two, three steps. And by the way, he had a little bit of a pregnant pause before he went down there because I guess that would have been his RPO logic. All right. Well, we'll keep talking Jaguars in a second.
Who's he blocking? Wait a second. Who's he blocking in the end zone there? He's blocking no one.
Well, he actually had to go find a guy, but yeah, he did. He went a couple steps forward and found, but no, it's
he hesitated.
Yeah.
Then started going in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
He knows if someone's coming behind. He can see around him. He's not tunnel vision, right?
At that point, he blew it. At that point, you know, I don't think there's any question about that. All right, a little funky fact. Let's do one here, JJ.
Time now for a funky fact. Get funky with Funky Buddha.
Especially when you're playing the holidays, you can get a little craft in your life down there in beautiful Oakland, Florida. You can pick up some of that Funky Buddha Brewery magic in the cooler section of your local grocer. Check it out. Now, we were talking college football just a second ago, and so I've got this seems to me to be a pretty good number. We have a guy in Division I college football right now that has thrown a touchdown pass in 30 consecutive games. 30 straight. That is the longest active streak in the nation. Who is it?
30 straight. I'm going to say
30
straight touchdown pass.
Williams at USC.
I'm going to say
Caleb Williams.
I'm going to say Will Rogers at Mississippi State.
Right. Could be him. It's a good one.
Hmm.
No, because he didn't throw one against Alabama this year.
Well, that was Vanderbilt.
Oh, Alabama. Yeah. Didn't throw one against Alabama.
They scored 6 points. They did score at the end. Was that a run play?
No, it was a return touchdown.
No, it was a run play at the end of the game.
Oh, it was a run play?
And
okay.
That was it. They got 6 points,
right,
and they were done.
So it's
Since
not,
Matt's
it's not
right one. About Caleb Williams not playing in that many games, I'll go with Hendon Hooker.
That's a good one, too.
I don't think it's him either.
30 straight?
30 straight.
CJ Stroud hasn't started 30 games.
It's going to be like a MAC quarterback. I guarantee it is.
TLD and I had a little MAC-tion last night.
Yeah? How'd it go?
It was good.
Good.
Excellent.
I love the November MAC action.
Ohio.
As opposed to the April MAC action.
Yeah.
Well, snow on the beach, too, out there.
How about...
not Levis. Not from the program.
Yep, not Levis.
I'm going to go DTR.
Hmm?
I'm going to go DTR.
Okay.
That's a good one.
I think it's the Toledo quarterback, but I'm going to go DTR.
Because you don't remember his
name. I can't remember the Toledo quarterback's name.
All right, so y'all are all in.
Yep.
It is a guy that probably needs to be recognized a little bit more, and I always say he needs to get recognized a little bit more. Granted, it comes against maybe defenses that don't always bring
That's
the best.
Big 12 quarterback.
It is one Sammy Hartman from Wake Forest.
Our guy.
And he is
the mullet.
Dang good player.
Good
30 straight.
They've kind of underachieved, though, this year.
Yeah. Well, they got up. They had the game. They lost by 10 to Clemson, and it was a good game. It was a thrilling game. But then, yeah, North Carolina got them.
And to be fair, Florida State gave them that game.
Yeah. 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 You have to go back and look at that, but you could easily come up with that.
Didn't they go to overtime against Clemson?
Yes.
I mean, FSU could FSU could easily be, like, if they win a bowl game, could have easily won 11 games this year. If they went out and won a bowl game.
Well,
they should have won that Wake game.
Yeah.
And they should have won the NC State game, too, if not absurd play call on second and short.
Yeah, but you know what LSU's saying about FSU is
That's also true.
They should have won that game. Yeah,
special teams. Yeah. They got to be special.
Well, that's why you instead of holding your finger up, that one finger up, Brian, that's a go for two situation right there.
He learned his lesson.
They're going to win 10, man. I'm telling you, they are.
Yeah. Well,
they're going to beat Florida, and then they're going to beat Illinois in the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it'd be great for them if Mike Norvell, if they could do it.
I'd love to see Mike Norvell with the mayo on his head.
Yeah.
That's our bowl, bro. You can't take our bowl.
We're not getting to a bowl,
bro. You going to the toilet bowl quickly.
All right. Let's get ready to say hello to Chris Jackson. He of the wide receiver coaching department, that coaching room that has produced Chris Kurt, Zay Jones, Marvin, all those guys. We'll say hello to him coming up. It's XL Primetime. Thanks to the Golf Club of Southampton on a Wednesday. You can call 287-PLAY. Head on out there. Enjoy a great round of golf any day. You've got an amazing practice facility. You become a member, you get to go to that large area in the back, but they got so many areas that you could just roll up and work on your game. And then if you got a tournament like we do with the Toys for Tots, right there at the Golf Club of Southampton, they will host you in a big way. Call 287-PLAY, and don't forget about their Friday night patio with Chef Gary creating a menu. Music on the back patio. It is a great scene, and you will love it.
Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Pleased to be joined by Jaguars wide receiver coach Chris Jackson during this bye week Wednesday. Coach, I know you guys just got off the field. How are we doing on this fine Wednesday, Chris?
We're doing great.
Love it. Love it. Great to hear. Obviously, a disappointing result on Sunday out in Kansas City. But for what seems like another week in a row, you have 9 different guys who caught passes for the Jaguars this past weekend. That's been a pretty consistent trend throughout the course of this year. 10 games in, Coach Jackson, how would you evaluate your wide receiver core?
I would say I thought they played very well up to this point. I think the way that our offense is most successful is when the ball is spread around, where Travis is getting the ball in the backfield. Our backs are doing their thing, making explosive runs, and then off of that comes the play-action passes, which I thought between the guys have done a great job presenting themselves for Trevor. I think they made plays. We're not perfect by no means, and there's still room to grow, but in regards to them kind of sharing the wealth and understanding like the genetic makeup of this team, I think they're doing a great job on all doing their part.
Now, Coach, how has the maturation process been going on since what you've seen in training camp to where you are now? Is there communications between Trevor and the wide receivers on what they see, whether they're playing zone or whether they're playing man, to where they can get open? How has that relationship been built?
I would say more so with certain individuals, and what I mean by that is, let's take Marv, for instance. You know, Marv doesn't have as many choice routes or read routes. Marv is going to be your outside guy who's your vertical threat, who's going to run your dagger routes, your dig routes, you know, presenting his big body and his catch radius. which he's done a great job thus far, you know, kind of when we needed him in those realms. Same thing kind of with Zay, where Zay has a couple option routes to where he can either sit and work out. So to your question, Zay a little bit, I think there's been some conversation between him and Trevor, but I would say most of that kind of boils down to Trevor and Christian, just because Christian up to this point has been our choice route runner, meaning you could break out, break in, or sit. So I think those two are doing a great job communicating as in regards to what they see, what coverage they get, they're getting on that particular play, and how they react to it. So I think they're, for the most part, all of them are doing a good job communicating.
We're talking with Chris Jackson, wide receivers coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars, came from the Bears to join Doug Peterson and his staff. And you know, I love Marvin. And when you think about it, Coach, he's the only holdover. All those other guys are newbies to Trev, and maybe Jamal Agnew just learning how to be more of a wide receiver. What about Trevor's growth this year as you've seen it from the wide receiver room?
I think Trevor's done a phenomenal job communicating in regards to like what he sees and how he expects us as wide receivers to come out of the breaks, whether it be like a dig route on a 20-yard comeback, how we're coming out of our in routes. I think he's doing a great job on just telling the guys what he sees, how he sees it, and how he expects us to come out. So the communication is there. Trevor's just growing every week in and week out. We got to do our job. I tell our guys all the time, man, especially versus zone defenses, it's not about winning our one-on-one matchups. It's about being what we're supposed to be, presenting ourselves accordingly to Trevor. And again, I think we've done that for the most part, but there's certain areas that we still need to continue to get better. It's not only his maturation process, it's also ours as well. So we got to kind of mature together.
Chris, you played under Mike Leach at Wazoo in 2014. Do you see principles of the air raid filtering into the NFL now? Do you see it more and more?
I did not play for Mike Leach, but
you did. Well, that's right. I'm reading on your bio; it says so. So, okay.
All right. I played for Mike Price, which was right. Very similar in regards.
So
to
that
the
must have been
04.
Okay. Okay,
98. Right. Oh, you're giving me credit, man. I'm a little older than
I am. I'm telling you right now, on the Jaguars side, it's 2014, so I don't know. And you look very young, so I'll give you credit there.
I think there's a place for the spread offense. Like if you see where we do really good at the end of the last couple halves where we've had to kind of get in two-minute mode, that's the best way I can kind of explain that spread offense is to where – you know, it's spread out to 3-by-1 or it's a 2-by-2. Everyone knows what they're running, how they're running, and the quarterback is knows exactly where he wants to go with the ball depending on the defense. So that's the best way I can explain, like, you know, the air raid or the spread offense comes into play in the NFL. Now, we didn't have as much, you know, 21 personnel, the runs, and the two tight end sets in college. So that's a lot different because you need that balance in the NFL. So if we can kind of match bigger bodies with bigger bodies and be successful, we'll do that. If we need to spread it out and go three wide receivers with a tight end in the back, then we do that. So I think it's a combination and a balance of just using it all to our advantage.
Couple more for Chris Jackson, wide receivers coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chris, I've discussed this with a couple members of the coaching staff. Obviously, at 3-7, this team isn't where it wants to be right now. Six one possession losses throughout the course of the first 10 weeks of the season. But at the same time, a lot of you guys, when you came in, when you signed up to coach under Doug, so many of you guys said that this was going to be a process. This was not an overnight fix. So I'm just curious in terms of where you expected this team to be, where they are. Frustration, maybe praise for where you guys are. How would you evaluate where you guys are currently when you first took the job where Doug expected you to be?
I would say in regards to my expectations coming in here, they're not far off from where we're at. I think we've done some good things. I think we've moved the ball. I think times that our wide receiver have been asked to kind of do their part, I think they have. I like the production in regards to where our receivers are and the growth of Trevor and the relationship between them. So we're not far off. The only thing that does not match from a production standpoint is just the wins and losses, unfortunately. So I think we've proven that we're a top 10 offense in the NFL. We just need to get the win-loss category to kind of fit kind of the team that we put on that field. And we're going to continue to grow. I think there's some things that we've shot ourselves in the foot in regards to the red zone in a few games where we've had some turnovers in the low red zone, which, you know, that changes everything. You know, that changes a couple wins here and a couple wins there. So we just got to continue growing, maturing together, just growing as we're a very young team. So I guess to answer your question, I'm happy where we're at. I think we're exactly where I thought we would be. I mean, with the addition of Christian Kirk and Zay, I think they both bring their strengths. You add Marv, who was a holdout from last year. You know, we're doing some great things. We just need to continue to get better and just not get complacent.
Hey, Chris, there's a couple different viewpoints of what happened in that first drive in the third quarter down at the goal line with the legal man downfield. Can you walk us through that play, exactly what happened and what it was?
It was just an RPO, run pass read, and Trevor made the right call with pulling the ball as the end kind of scraped down the line of scrimmage. And once Trevor pulled it, you know, that's one thing that you get in this league. Sometimes they call it, sometimes they don't. But, you know, when you talk about an RPO, it's a run play to the offensive line. So, you know, they're going to go do their job and block accordingly. And sometimes if that ball doesn't get out from a timing perspective, you know, we get caught with an illegal man downfield. But it was done everything to plan. So that's just something that we got to get better at and make sure that we're just more aware of those situations.
Now, Coach, you've been in that locker room. I mean, you lost a lot of close games. I mean, is there still confidence? Is there still a culture of winning and preparedness within this team, even though they've lost a couple of close ones where they felt like y'all should have won?
I would say yes. I think this team, they take their losses very hard. I think they're also aware when we get back in here on Monday and we go through the clips and the film, they do see how talented we are, especially, and I'm not speaking defensively, I'm just speaking offensively. You know, we move the ball up against some of the great defenses we played this year. I mean, you put Denver up there in regards to one of the top five defenses that we move the ball against them. We've consistently done that against every team we played. It's just a matter of just kind of tightening up in certain areas and kind of limiting those bonehead plays, man. It's just one or two plays that kind of just either take some momentum, swings the momentum, or just take the ball out of our hands. So our team recognizes that from an offensive perspective. So I think to answer your question, they're all on board. They're locked in. They know we're very talented. It's just we need to kind of start learning how to figure out how to win those games. It's a young group, and we just got to learn together. We got to just pull through and come out on the winning end on some of those close games.
Now, Coach, I've been in those locker rooms. I've been on this team in 96 when we started 3-7, and I think we were able to turn things around because guys on the team just got pissed off. I mean, is there anybody, you just got pissed off and just say, hey, listen, enough is enough. Enough of losing games in the fourth quarter. Enough of the mistakes and penalties and turnovers. Let's go out and win a freaking ball game. I mean, is there any sense of that from the coaching staff or any of the guys on the team that are just totally just frustrated by the fact that you've been losing a lot of close games, especially in the fourth quarter?
I would say yes. I know the coaching staff is dead on that. We understand like we need to pull some of those games out. And, you know, we bust our butts, man, like week in and week out in regards to preparation and putting these players in the best position we can. And we're close. We're right there. So, yes, we're pissed as a coaching staff. And I think a lot of the players are pissed as well because, you know, again, we're right there. And it's always one or two things that are preventing us from pulling off those games, whether it be just defense getting a stop, offense finishing, or maybe special teams putting us in better positions. So I think right now, to be honest with you, waiting to see who those alpha dogs from an offensive perspective, you know, who's going to set themselves apart from everybody else? Who's going to be that leader? Who's going to be pissed? Who's going to get them to jump on ship and to lock in and to call people out, you know, to make them accountable when things aren't going right, you know, where I think we're still learning that, to be honest with you. So I think as we kind of get back here, get away from football, and then come back after that bye week, I think that's a big thing is who's going to be that alpha dog that steps up and demands us to be great and to make this push here because 3-7, we're not out of it right now, especially the way that we've lost these games. No one else in the NFL has lost the way we have. So I think we just need to buy in. We need to make sure we get those dogs to step up once we get back. They need to hold everybody accountable. And we just need to go. We just, like Coach says all the time, all he knows is how to work and work. So we're going to come back here. We're going to put our head down and we're going to work.
I think all of Duval loves hearing that. Real quick before we turn you loose, Chris, Coach Chris Jackson, wide receivers coach, the bio before, it made you a much younger man, so I'm going to ask you about this one. Were you part of the Bill Walsh Diversity Coaching Fellowship?
Yes, I was.
And I would just love for you to speak on that just for a quick second, because a lot was brought up with Jeff Saturday being appointed an interim last week. And all I know is that, you know, guys like you, you're busting your arse just to make sure that you learn as much as you possibly can. So how important is it to have that Bill Walsh Diversity Fellowship that's been formed?
That was awesome. Just in the sense that, you know, there's very few job opportunities, you know, especially in this NFL, and especially when you do not have the history of coaching in this league. So that's your only way in. So I remember I had a great relationship with Matt Nagy, who I played arena football with for 3 years, and who is a personal friend of mine. And I know when he got the head job in Chicago, you know, he had mentioned, he goes, I'm going to get your foot in the door. And he says, once I get your foot in the door, he goes, the rest is going to be on you. But I'm going to do my part, and I'm going to make sure I get you in here on that internship. And I took full advantage of that in 18. I started off on the defensive side of the ball, working with Deshae Townsend in Chicago, who is now our secondary and our pass game coordinator here in Jacksonville. So it was a great way for me just to kind of learn all the details, all the nuances that goes on behind the scene, because it's a three-hour game, but there's so many hours during the week that goes on in regards to game planning and relationship with coaching and kind of detailing everything out. So I got to learn all the backside of things. Now, I worked some long hours, and it prepared me exactly for the position I'm in now. So I'm forever grateful for Matt giving that opportunity for me. And if I didn't go through that internship, like, I wouldn't have had any idea on really the relationships, the time, the effort, the energy, everything that goes on behind the scenes just to make a three-hour game on Sundays work.
I love that. I love that.
Real quick before we let you go, Chris, because I'm not sure if you're familiar, but what we have here at 1010XL, we call it the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures, so our listeners can submit thoughts about how we're doing as hosts, but also questions for our various guests on the program. And a couple of them are wondering if you're able to at all speak on Calvin Ridley and the acquisition and what he could mean for this team last year. You know, anything that you can illuminate for us on what he can bring to the Jaguars.
I can't speak a whole lot on that just because I haven't had a conversation with him, nor can I. But it's from what I know about him, I know he is a great pro. I know he's a great route runner. And I think if you put those two, you know, which what he's able to bring to the table is going to be great. But, again, I can't really speak until, you know, he's in the building and we get to see that kind of live. But, you know, that's really all I can say on that one.
Listen, good stuff, Coach. Man, we really appreciate it. Continued hard work, and it sounds like there's a lot of success that could be ahead. Appreciate your time for sure.
Hey, thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks so much, Chris. Chris Jackson, wide receivers coach for the Jaguars. The bye week officially begins after this morning's practice for the Big Cats. They'll be out of town the rest of the week.
It looks like they've been talking about what I was talking about in the first hour.
And Leon,
somebody's got to actually say something, man. Yeah. Somebody's got to get pissed.
Got him to peel back a layer of that onion, right? And honestly, that's what it comes down to, is reveal yourself, right? Whoever those leaders are going to be.
He called them out. He says, I'm looking for some alpha dogs on offense.
We wanted somebody to publicly do it. He just did it.
Exactly. Someone on offense that could hold everybody accountable. He letting you know right there it's not being done.
But I do like what he's saying. Because there is a tremendous amount of stuff that has to go into changing a football team, turning the worm. There's just a lot of stuff. And there's so many individuals. Like, there's just so many of them that are all having to work together with a new set of coaches.
I agree that. I think my point is, I think they're there right now as far as they have the players to win more games than they've won right now.
Right.
So I think the next thing is, they've got to get pissed when they lose. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're there right now. That's my biggest problem. And, oh, by the way, I've watched this RPO like 10 times. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that Trevor walked to the line of scrimmage and it was pre-snap. He was going pass all the way because they had a mismatch, because they had Ingram in the backfield. And I don't think the Chiefs knew Ingram was in the backfield. And if you watch it over and over, he pulled that run so quick and sprinted to the left. It was like a sprint out for him.
Well, he also changed the play call on the Christian Kirk first touchdown, too. So I'm wondering if maybe he changed. Did it look like he changed the play?
No, it was definitely an RPO, but he literally just. He didn't even leave in the belly for not even a tenth of a second. It was just boom, gone, and he sprinted left. There's no doubt that was pre-snap. I'm throwing the ball.
Three tight ends set as well. You know, they love those tight ends with a good old Dougie P.
All I know is Cam was in the end zone.
I don't disagree with you.
Cam has responded to you.
So here's
Leon.
The thing. I don't disagree with you because the other four linemen were not in the end zone.
They were in the end zone. What did he say? What did he say?
He has responded to you, Leon. Cam wants you to say, show me the route. You're talking about the combo to the linebacker.
Show you the route. It's called a joke, bro. Offensive line, it's a joke. It's too lame to realize it's a joke. And tell him I don't do Twitter battles. I don't do Twitter battles.
All right, Big Sur, I know what you are going to do. You can enjoy the rest of the afternoon.
I am, absolutely.
That's what you're going to do. He's out. Leon Searcy, you can find him at Leon Searcy Jr. 1. He would love.
Yeah, he would love your Twitter follows and your interactions on there. We're going to say goodbye to Leon for the day, and we're going to say hello to Dr. George Barry. You are listening to XL Primetime on a Wednesday.
This is XL Primetime, brought to you by Florida Home AC. Now that's cool on 1010XL.
I think right now, to be honest with you, waiting to see who those alpha dogs from an offensive perspective, who's going to set themselves apart from everybody else? Who's going to be that leader? Who's going to be pissed? Who's going to get them to jump on ship and to lock in and to call people out, to make them accountable when things aren't going right? I think we're still learning that, to be honest with you. So who's going to be that alpha dog that steps up and demands us to be great?
There you go. Chris Jackson, wide receivers coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was on with us in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll make sure you have it on 1010XL on demand so you can go back and check it out. I thought a class guy in a revealing interview that you are looking for the quote alpha dog to take over. And if you think about it, Trevor Lawrence, somewhat subdued. You'd like to see him get that little fire in his belly, but he's obviously playing at a much higher level than he was before. But you might be able to go back to Christian Kirk and Trevor having just a little bump, just a little bump in the road that just, get me the ball. Let's make some plays. Let's show some urgency. And we have seen that over the last couple of weeks with Trevor taking off and running a little bit more and obviously having a higher completion percentage. That may have been the one, the first alpha dog that was stepping up.
And then Christian Kirk got to the mic yesterday for the final availability from Jaguars players before they take off for the bye week this week and have a couple days off. And he said that he was sick to his stomach after the game, and it hurt initially, but it hurt even more when he was watching the tape back. And so those some fighting words, and you need them. As much as Christian Kirk, yes, his natural tone of voice is maybe not fiery per se.
Right.
But I do want to comment real quick on Trevor, because I asked him after, discovering about, some of the words that him and Christian had with one another after that London loss, about Trevor's leadership style, because he's very confident in who he is as a leader. I think that that's very apparent, but he also knows he's not a hoorah in your face, like, let's go guy. And that's okay. He doesn't have to be. Maybe, and I'll say this much, because this was a philosophical question that I know in college we talked a lot about because of various people's roles, whether that's the president of a college, whether that's a head football coach. Do they have to be an extrovert versus if they're an introvert, do they have to put on an extroverted face for those situations? And I think Trevor tries to, but he also recognizes his limitations. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you still need someone in that locker room who's going to step up and be that person.
And by the way, Matt, Travis Etienne's not a rah-rah fire guy either, but he's a playmaker. And if you make plays, they will follow you. And then when you need to bust and get something off your chest, they will definitely pop up and listen.
I also think, like, if Trevor were to finally say, hey, man, this stops right now.
Yeah, the same flying.
I think they would listen because he's not that type of guy.
Right.
So then they're thinking, all right, this is real now. Mm-hmm. This dude doesn't say anything, just goes about his work and does his job. Now he's fed up. I don't see how that could be a bad thing, actually.
Yeah, it's so funny. If you think about some championship coaches, you definitely see the guys that lit players up. Leon talks about Jimmy Johnson quite a bit. But you can think of so many other guys that were never necessarily that personality, Tony Dungy being the antithesis of that, that was able to coach at a high level. You can even go back to Joe Gibbs with all of his championships, very tempered and measured and all that kind of stuff. Bill Belichick, I mean, come on. It appears there's no personality or pizzazz there, but he gets it done.
When he speaks, they listen. Right. Yeah. When he speaks, they listen, it's funny with our Leon Cam Robinson talk, we didn't even get to hit yet. Rayshon Jenkins, a little salty, upset with the Jaguars social team yesterday. I see all of you who were tagging us in it on Twitter. Yeah. We did see it.
Not loving on Rashawn.
He was not one of the players that in this graphic the Jaguars chose to name as a potential Pro Bowler that you should vote for. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't too happy about it, even putting his stats that he's number one among safeties in passes defense this year. Listen, maybe he's one of the guys that's going to say enough is enough. Maybe Dewey's rubbing off on him, JJ, and since their lockers are near each other.
They might have defensive guys. To be fair, Chris Jackson did say offensive.
Yeah, correct.
Right. And you're right. Rashawn may be speaking
up. We know Dewey's the guy.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah. I mean, Dewey's a reserved leader. And so the idea is that you want those guys that have been in the biggest of games and have come out on top to be leaders. But it's the point I made earlier. There just aren't enough of those necessarily on this football team. But Rashawn has had a renaissance or a rebirth or however you want to describe it from last year where he was getting taunting penalties after getting beat. And now playing at a pretty high level, especially the first half of the games that we've seen to this point, walking up to the line of scrimmage and being an enforcer. I noticed it. I certainly appreciate it.
Sure. Got out of concussion protocol and played 98% of the snaps on Sunday and might have been one of their best defenders again. Yeah.
And by the way, if he were to keep doing that and Cisco becomes the roamer and playmaker with balls that are in the air, both of those guys could be leaders. That's for sure. By the way, as soon as I say that, it pops in my head. There is a Twitter handle out there now that has just recently been created. His balls are different. And so that is out there right now.
They're all on the text
his
line.
His balls are different
Thank
in
you.
Person.
Yes. Thank you, JJ. Yes. I appreciate that. Yes. They're all yelling at me on the text line this morning. And I don't know what I'm talking about. And then the flipping wide receiver coach of the Jaguars comes on and says, somebody's got to get pissed off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And look, coaches know this. They need a player to identify themselves, a player to make that move.
Speaking of a little upset.
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
We got another Gator in the transfer portal, people. Mm-hmm. Griffin McDowell, officially considered a redshirt junior, but he has been with the Gators for 5 years, appearing in 40 games during his time in Gainesville, is leaving Gainesville for his final season of eligibility in college football, according to On3 Sports. Mm-hmm.
You always have to, whenever you hear the transfer portal and someone's moving, as soon as the name is said, you have to go, I recognize him, or who the hell is that?
I mean, to be fair, he's a guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what happens, is that's what Billy's doing, is that it is a move on.
Remember when I told you guys that
either move up or move on?
A guy on the staff told me in the summer that there are guys that shouldn't be Power 5 players.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, and Billy's identifying them. And by the way, Billy's coming from non-Power 5.
He knows what a group of 5 player looks like, believe me.
Exactly. So, all right, let's get into the high school half hour with guys that are soon to be stars, group of 5, Power 5, all over the college football planet. We're going to say hello to Sean McIntyre of Creekside. A huge ball game in the SJC, along with many others in Duval and in Clay. We'll hit them all with our high school half hour. I-9 Sports bringing it to you next.
The high school half hour brought to you by I-9 Sports. The way youth sports should be. Log on i9sports.com.
So I'm a man, Dougie, who runs I-9 Sports all over the First Coast earlier. Fundraising, golf tournament. He's got it all going on right now. And for kids and parents, moms, dads, whoever want to get your kid involved in any type of sport year-round, you can do it with I-9 all over the First Coast, Duval, St. John's, and Clay. Make sure you check out i9sports.com. You can log in, throw that 1010XL promo code at them, and get a discount as we talk some high school playoff football.
Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
The battle for Longleaf Parkway, the battle for 210, round two. This Friday night, Bartram Trail and Creekside will meet once again. We are now joined by Creekside head football coach Sean McIntyre. Coach Mack, how's it going?
It's going great. I appreciate you guys having me on. I mean, beautiful day to have some football practice today, so excited for that for sure.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you and your boys are hoping you'll be practicing next week, Thanksgiving week, as that is always the goal here in high school football. But let's dive right into this. Well, actually, you know what? Let's hold off on the matchup because I know
the
momentum is building. But again, last week, first playoff win for Creekside since 2011. Coach McIntyre, just describe what it was like going all the way out to the Panhandle. You guys practiced at Tallahassee at Dope Campbell, and then you get the dub. You get back at like 6 a.m., and now you got to turn around and face Bartram for a second time.
Yeah, for sure. You obviously were following our guy Noah on our journey. It was an awesome trip. Such hospitality by Florida State to practice in their indoor facility. And that was a really good – we're used to taking 2.5-hour bus trips. We've gone to Orlando last year in the playoffs and gone to Georgia, which is about a 2-hour trip. And we've made some trips that we're used to. So we broke it up into two 2.5-hour trips and got to practice at FSU. And just a really cool experience. Our kids were really locked in. At FSU, and we ate lunch there. We were off the bus for a good long while, got their legs stretched out and moved around, and then took the trip to the Panhandle, ate pregame meal, and onto the school, and our kids handled it really, really well. We came out. At one point, it was 24-0, and we're playing really well on both sides of the ball, really efficient on offense and defensively, really physical, and just proud of the way our kids responded. I mean, a six-hour bus trip is not easy. It was not easy. And, you know, our kids, they didn't flinch. They didn't bat an eye. And just proud of how they played in those circumstances in that environment.
Going to ask you to give us a little bit of what you did get out of there and what you see with Bartram coming up. We're talking with Sean McIntyre, coach of Creekside. But I got to ask you, what do you think the cumulative calorie count would have been for your players and how many meals that you probably had? Because if you go from the time you left until early in the morning, how much food did those lads consume?
We spent about $3,000 on food. So when they got to school last Friday morning, we fed them grumpy biscuit sandwiches. They all got a biscuit sandwich. They all got a chocolate milk. And we had some extra PB&Js that we feed them every day if they wanted that too. Then when we got to Tallahassee, we all had a Chick-fil-A sandwich, chips, a cookie, and some fruit. And then we went to Sonny's, ate a pregame meal at Sonny's, quarter chicken, mac and cheese, green beans, cornbread. And then we had everybody, two kids, one pizza after the game before we get back on the bus. So they each got a half a pizza. Some kids probably had a little bit more than that. some kids might not have had as much, just, you know, depending on their preference. But, you know, we take care of the kids, and they deserve to eat like that. The way that they're playing, the way that they're executing and performing, and the way that we get support from our community, from our school here at Creekside. You know, that we try to run a first-class program. For us and for me, I make every decision based on the experience of the kids. There are some difficult decisions that have to be made, but we always try to put the kids first. And every aspect, whether it's a kid that's being held accountable for something because he needs to be held accountable for that, or it's feeding him really good on a playoff game day. We try to put those kids first every single day in every decision that we make.
All right, man, so I promise you we're going to get to the football. I just want to kind of settle a question we've had for a long time here. When you guys take those long bus trips, is it the yellow school bus or do you guys charter bus? That's number one. And number two, you played Bartram Trail a month ago. What can you get out of that game a month ago, or can you get anything out of it?
Yeah, to answer your first question about the charter bus, our radius is about an hour. We're willing to go about an hour on a yellow dog.
Okay. Yellow dog.
Because of the comfort. if it's over an hour, we're going to probably have a charter. Yeah. You know, there's not very many games here. It's either far away or it's within 45 minutes. So right. It's a pretty easy delineation there. And then your second question, you know, we obviously are very familiar with Bartram Trail. They gave us all we wanted 6 weeks ago, and just going to try to play to the best of our ability. I don't believe we played to the best of our ability last matchup, and that's all I want. I never pray for our team to win. I just pray that we put them in the best situation to play to the best of their ability, and that's all I want. If we play well and lose, so be it. I just want to play to the best of our ability, give our kids the best chance to play to the best that they can play for all the work that they've put in and done to make themselves ready to play in a football game of this magnitude.
Sean McIntyre, head coach of the Creekside Knights, joining us on the Fair and Farrah phone line as part of our I-9 High School Sports Half Hour. Coach McIntyre, your squad has not lost since they lost to Bartram Trail on October the 14th. You guys are averaging about 40 points per game during that stretch. I know you and I talked earlier in the season about the emergence of Nick Williams at the time, and this is like we're talking week three when you guys played Glynn Academy up there in the torrential downpour at Glynn County Stadium, and Nick really showed up there. What has he been able to do over these last 4 weeks in particular, though? He's averaging 109 yards per game on the ground. What sort of spark plug has he been with his 18 total touchdowns for you guys this year?
Yeah, he had a little bit of a lull in the middle of the season. He actually broke his hand in the middle of the Mandarin game, in the middle of the second quarter. Finished the game. After that game was the hurricane delay, and we got about 10 days off. And the doctor cleared him to play with a cast the day before our next game. But that was really impacting him. It really impacted the way he carried the ball in the middle of the season. We didn't know it at the time, having watched it, but now watching him play the last 3-4 weeks when he's been completely healthy, he's been a different kid. He's back to how he was carrying the ball early in the season. And so we didn't realize how much he was just so concerned about ball security and so concerned about the pain management that he was going through that he wasn't himself. And so with him being fully healthy, we really, just love watching him do what he does with the ball in his hands. Our offensive line, they're going to come off the football and give him opportunities to run the ball downhill. And he's pretty hard to tackle. We got great lateral agility. He's got great vision. He sets up his blocks really, really well. So he's a fun kid to hand the ball to for sure. You never know what's going to happen when he gets the football.
Last one, Coach, as you do get ready for Bartram and we did talk about, best effort, but you had a 27-point win against Navarro. They had a 30-point win against Palm Coast. So offense is working, defense is working. What's one thing you'd like to see your team play or do better against Bartram this go-around?
Turnovers and big plays. That's huge for us. When we look at our win-loss record and we look at the way that we play and the competition that we play, there's a definitive tell in wins and loss for us, and that's big plays. And we gave up quite a few of those against Bartram Trail. The first time we played, it was just a lack of eye discipline, a lack of tackling, and fitting the ball properly on defense. And then turnovers. We lost the turnover battle against them. And Friday, if we lose the turnover battle again, we're going to have an uphill battle against them. So they make you earn everything that you get. They are probably the best coach team in the state. They're extremely talented. They're really committed to what they do, and they do it at a really, really high level. So, making sure that we take care of ourselves and take care of the ball is going to be critical for us Friday night.
Before we say goodbye, I do want to give you guys what we like to call here, Coach McIntyre, saucy nugs on your program. That's what we like to say about our fun facts. Here's some of the scores among the 9 wins that Creekside had this year, boys. 21-20 over Glynn Academy, in which they were down 20-0 at the half, mind you. 49-48 over Oakleaf. 38-35 over Fleming Island. We're talking a team that wins in the fourth quarter. That's something.
Saucy nugs.
Coach McIntyre, that's something that, we've been saying with the Jaguars that maybe.
Coach the Jags, coach.
Yeah, they need to learn to win in the fourth quarter. I mean, is that how you would sum this up? That, unlike maybe some teams in the NFL or college, you guys have found a way in the end of ball games.
Yeah, I think it's a process. I think it's part of the process of just growing your program. I'm sure Doug Peterson is going to happen for him. He's an excellent football coach. And you have to learn how to play for four quarters. Then you have to learn how to finish through four quarters. We've lost some tight games in fourth quarters in the previous years. And now it's not our team. I mean, shoot, but two of those football games, we threw touchdown passes. One had 30 seconds left on the clock and one had 8 seconds left on the clock. And, our team just hasn't flinched. They really, the thing that I can say that gives me just the most pride in this football team is how connected we are as a coaching staff, as a team. We had our backs against the wall in a couple moments, and it was just like, no problem, coach. We got each other. We got this. And that's the way that they play, and I just want them to play that way Friday night. We play together and play connected. I'm going to be proud no matter what happens.
Well, listen, we're all connected because we got plenty of Creekside fans, plenty of Bartram fans, plenty of 210ers that are listening to XL Primetime, including the boys at Taps. So, continued success. Go get them on Friday night, and we look forward to a great game.
We appreciate you guys, man. Thank you for spotlighting high school football and all that happens here on Friday nights in the area. Appreciate you guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Sean. You the man. Appreciate it. Sean McIntyre of the Creekside Knights, their first playoff win since 2011 this past Friday night. Looking for more against the crosstown rival Bartram Trail Bears this Friday.
The High School Half Hour, brought to you by I-9 Sports, the way youth sports should be. Log on i9sports.com.
Our recap of the high school football playoffs week one continues as we welcome on our guy of news for Jax, Justin Barney, on the Farrah and Farrah phone line.
Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
JB, by the way, also coming in clutch for some of our high school basketball coverage that we're going to be bringing you here on 1010XL earlier this week. JB, our guy, what's going on, brother?
Not too much. A busy first week and another good second week of games coming up. Basketball season going on, soccer season going on, a lot of action going on. How about Talia Scott signing with Arkansas yesterday, bringing out a pig for the signing day ceremony? So a lot of good activity in the area in the First Coast sprouting up this time of year.
I talked to Coach Yo this morning. I think we need to get Sam Pittman alerted to the fact that she had the live pig at her signing day. The number 11 recruit in all of girls basketball in the there it is.
Thank you, Coach.
JJ knows where it's at. Let's dive into the high school football playoffs, though, JB. Obviously, the marquee matchup, we just had him on, Coach McIntyre's Creekside Knights making the trip to Bartram Trail to face their crosstown rivals, round two. That has to be the marquee matchup, correct me if I'm wrong, at least in our area. And what do you anticipate coming out of Longleaf Parkway this week?
Well, you know, it's always a great matchup when those two teams play. Bartram 14-1 in those games against Creekside, so history obviously on the Bears' side, but we've never seen a game between these two in the playoffs. You go by things in the regular season, Bartram should be a heavy favorite in this game. But again, Creekside, very, very capable offense. They're averaging over 40 points a game this season and coming off a big win on the road at Navarre, 47-20 game. Bartram won 50-20 against Palm Coast. Both these teams are no strangers to the end zone. They can crank up the touchdowns we needed. But the question for Creekside is, can you do it when it matters? One win all time against Bartram in a game that kept the Bears out of the playoffs, one of the few misses that Bartram has had in its history and not making the postseason. So it's going to be a tough one for Coach McIntyre and the Knights. I'm a very firm believer in high school football that history does account for something. I've seen the Bartram-St. Augustine jinx go on forever when Bartram certainly had more talent than St. Augustine, and St. Augustine just found ways to win. So you can better be sure that Creekside players know that history. They know what's at stake, and little brother could really rise to the occasion with the win over big brother in this game on Friday night. So that is going to be a massive electric atmosphere. Even regular season games between those two feel like playoff matchups. The intensity, the electricity in the air of those games, it's going to be a standing room only crowd, and it's going to be the game of the night in the area. No questions asked.
I'm not sure you can call them little brother.
I'm not sure
you can.
He's right, though.
We know what happened with Michigan State when they got called little brother.
Record-wise, though, right, Jay Varn?
Yeah, you know, Bartram has been around since 2000. Creekside came along 8 years later, and they've just not had that success against Bartram that a Ponte Beaters had against.
He might have fired him up. Justin.
In a lot of ways, it's Bartram to St. Augustine High. It was that way for the longest time, right, Justin?
Absolutely. It's flipped in recent years. You know, Bartram was 0-17 against St. Augustine before it won its first game, and Creekside has won one game and 15 tries against Bartram.
So it's all
those guys played.
Same thing. Wow.
You know, the great rivalry game, and you just cannot get over that hump for whatever reason. And Bartram is just one of the most consistent programs in the area. So to beat Bartram, you got to be on your game. And again, that's a rivalry game. You know, the Bartram-St. Augustine rivalry game for years was just the talk of the area. How do you have that much success against one program? How, when you have a talent discrepancy, does St. Augustine continue to win? And again, that streak, that history matters. You know, when in crunch time of those games, that certainly comes into play. Can you get over that hump and beat a rival that you've not had the success against? So I expect that to be a big part of Friday night's game as well. We figured Creekside could challenge them earlier this year, and they were not able to do that, end up losing by almost four touchdowns in that game. So Bartram has weathered these challenges before. We'll see if they can do it again at home on Friday night.
All right, a couple more quickies for Justin Barney at Justin Barney TV on Twitter, and, of course, newsforjax.com/sports for all things high school in sports in Duval in the First Coast. Before we say goodbye to those teams that got upset last week, what shocked you the most? St. Augustine did lose. Bishop Kenny lost. Riverside pulling off the upset against Jackson. Fletcher season coming to an end. What got you the most?
Yeah, I think that when you look at just a seed perspective, the only number one seed in the state to lose its opening round game was Jackson. They lose a one touchdown game, 20-13, to Riverside. And again, you know, historically that game has been controlled by, you know, by a Riverside Flash Lee in that series. So Jackson beat them earlier this year for the first time in more than a decade. Ugly game in the regular season, 6-2. But for whatever reason, Jackson just had struggles finishing this season. They lost Week 11 to First Coast, and then you go out and you really lay an egg in the playoff opener as the number one seed. So anytime you're an 8 beating a 1, that's a pretty sizable upset, no matter if those teams are a little bit closer than those seeds indicated. But I think that, for me, would have to be the biggest takeaway in round one, was that Riverside 20, Jackson 13 score.
Our guy Grayson Howard, by the way, Andrew Jackson, South Carolina commit, let me know today that he will be having his All-American Bowl jersey presentation next Saturday for anybody.
Nice.
Anybody who's looking to support Grayson. JB, as we look at the rest of the schedule, I know we dove in really on Bartram Trail and Creekside. Who are some other marquee matchups you see for week two of the high school playoffs?
Yeah, so many good ones out there. Riverside Reigns is the one you look at, other than that, Bartram Creekside, Baker County, and Baldwin, another great one. Baldwin beat Baker County in the regular season, so that game, the number two seeded Indians will host that one. So that was an historic win over Baker County earlier this year, so see if they can do it again. And then, you know, we look down in our smaller classifications, Region 1-1M, Trinity Christian and University Christian. The 1 and 2 seeds in that region, they are both hosting Orlando area teams, Orlando Christian Prep coming to Trinity, Orlando First Academy coming to University Christian. Expect Trinity and UC to win those games and set up a rematch next week. In Region 3-1R, Madison County, multiple times state champ, going to Union County and Hilliard. Can't forget about the guys out there at the edge of Nassau County. They are hosting Lafayette, so we'll see if they can get that done. But I love that Riverside Reigns, love the Baker County Baldwin matchup, so we'll see if those guys can get it done as well on Friday night.
By the way, our boys at Bradford, back on the shutout. Mm-hmm. Back on the shutout
streak. Smoked them.
48-0 over Crescent City, JB.
Yeah, smoked them.
That's right. Yeah. You expect, you know, the 10-7 loss did not do anything to them. I expect them to be a state semifinal team.
Awesome. Hey, dude, thanks, man. We will catch up next week, and we hope that all of our area high school teams in action this week keep rolling into next week. Thanks, buddy.
Take care, guys. Thanks.
All right. News4jax.com/sports for our man.
We got to get our boy on again, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll get him back on. Right. Again, we were – I'll give you
– Like JB said, they're going to make the state semifinals at the very least. Yeah.
They got Eastside, Gainesville Eastside.
I'll give you a secret coming up in a second, but let's say thanks to I-9 Sports, our high school half hour, brought to you by I9Sports.com. Don't forget, ages 3 to 17. They've got co-ed programs, girls and boys. You can make sure that you enjoy all of it, soccer, basketball, flag football, you name it. They're going to set it up for you, and you don't have to worry about all those intensive practices. You're just getting your kids out and making sure they're involved. I9Sports.com, throw 1010XL in that little box, promo code for a discount.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Keeping 1010XL talking with wholesale prices and premium service. Tire Outlet, Jacksonville's largest locally owned automotive repair shop.
Wednesday is an Island Wing thing for the Franchi Show. They are out in the SJC, Bartram Springs, at Island Wing. Lauren Brooks joins us now. What is up?
You got that right, Joe, and just hanging out here until we get our coconut shrimp.
Yeah, and you know, you guys have survived storms before, but today it's just coconut shrimp. And by the way, we had one of our listeners drop off food from Island Wing, and they made sure they brought coconut shrimp to us, and it hit the mark for sure.
That was so sweet of them.
Yep, very nice, very nice.
They must think that between noon and 3 you're hungry, but yeah, that's lunchtime.
we love our listeners in that it does fall during lunch most of the time. So what is happening out there?
Absolutely, yes. So D-Rock is going to join Hayes and myself until 6 o'clock here. And we're going to have, of course, a lot of fun. And then we will have Pete Prisco jump in at 5 o'clock today, since Hayes, Frank, and I will be off on Friday. So we want to make sure we get Pete on today. And then we also have the State Farm College Football Report talking Florida, Florida State, and Miami coming up at 5:20.
You will be jam-packed. All right, Island Wing right out there in Bartram Springs, the St. Johns County area. Drop on by and check out Hayes, Lauren, and the star, Mike DeRocco, because DeRocco will pop in. He popped in on us at First Florida Credit Union, so he's the guy who will bring him in, that's for sure.
He is the star. Anytime you put ESPN in front of somebody, obviously, they have stardom. And like you said, we've weathered storms before, but it's beautiful out. I love this temperature.
Yep, come on out and check him out. All right, thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, head on out there.
I do want to make a note, since I see DS on the text line, Design My Lifetime Enclosures, saying that maybe the text line is complaining about Cam Robinson's penalty on that Evan Engram touchdown.
Right.
And needing someone to step up. It was implied that Cam was lying about the RPO when the coach, as in Chris Jackson, the wide receivers coach who joined us earlier in the program, pointed out that, in fact, it was an RPO. Notice that wasn't really discovered afterward. I would like to note, DS, that Doug Peterson was asked about that play on Monday. John Shipley of Sports Illustrated tweeting out his response to that, which was, quote, "It's hard because sometimes we argue the fact that they're engaged on a block, which is okay as long as they stay engaged. The couple on Sunday, the one on Juwan, the one on Cam, I think they were the right decision. That, to me, doesn't necessarily fall on them. They're doing what we asked them to do. That's a coaching thing that we can fix. We talked about it today as a staff. We have ways of correcting it and making sure they're not downfield next time."
Oh, yeah. And look, we're flying through all our other subjects, so we definitely wanted to bring it up. We looked at the play afterwards just to see, and Leon is the one who expressed it as clear as anybody, is that you can engage, you can lock up, you just cannot advance. That's the whole idea of a run-pass option.
Plus, the other four offensive linemen?
They were moving to the right.
Not in the end zone, they were moving to the right.
Right, yeah. And so that's the biggest part of it. But I did like the fact that CJ, that Chris Jackson said, RPO, just Cam got caught. That's just basically what happened, and it took a touchdown off the board. We are out. We are off the board right now. We say thanks to the Golf Club of Southampton. Don't forget, 287 Play. Great golf course. Great people. Plan an event there. Head on out. Play a round of golf with your buddies. You will love it. And we look forward to our Toys for Tots celebration. Primetime Christmas, December 7th. If you want to drop an unwrapped toy off right here, we'll make sure it gets in the hands of the Marines that day, or drop it off at Southampton. Joe C., MLB, me, O'Brien, Matty Hayes. Check out his stuff at SaturdayDownSouth.com. And JJ, take it away.